two.
Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyslip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Gamma's Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Toy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyards.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com.
I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Thank you. Trying to get themselves all revved up because we're supposed to have rain for the next 3 days here. So,
yep. It's raining here pretty good. Is it raining there
is
yet?
Is it or now?
No? Oh, yeah.
Is it? Oh, it's coming, wow.
Coming down pretty good.
No, it's not raining here yet. It's a little bit teased, but no rain yet. So,
wow.
Huh. Wow.
Okay.
So, wow.
Yeah, that was coming in.
Yeah, we.
So, welcome to the program. It's what is it, March 20 something?
24th.
Yep, of course. And here we are. If you want to get on the program, give us a call.
Easter week, actually. Yeah.
Right.
If you are, you celebrate Easter. It's Easter week and Passover. So
yeah, very busy time here.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's lots of other stuff. It seems to be a holy week everywhere in the world. So, you know, this is really a pretty busy week for the holy weeks and stuff. So, good time to pump out the wine. You know, it's a great excuse to be drinking wine, kosher if you're so inclined or whatever. So, yeah.
Yep. That's right. Good. Well, and we have our guest tonight is Ron. And,
yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yay.
I will be with you tonight.
That's a good thing. If you want to get on the program, give us a call on the guest line. It's open now, 646-727-3235. Give us a call.
We will be standing by.
Yes. I'll just wait here until I get a call.
Yeah, there you go. I'll just talk, and you can just wait right there. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Stand by.
Right.
Yeah, well, actually, you can go ahead and tweet a little bit, because we have our followers out there on your tweets, so that's always a good thing. So.
Yeah, that's cool. Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're following us on tweet, thanks. What was it? A couple of days ago, I think, was the anniversary of Tweet being founded.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I had a glass of wine to that. That was a great reason to have a glass of wine. I think it was 10 years, 10 years ago, the first tweet. And,
Probably on a trip phone, but,
Yeah, somebody Twittered. He spelled TWTTR. And he says, I'm sending a Twitter, or something like that. He spelled it real weird. But welcome to All About Wine. We have a few things to talk about tonight and a little bit of, oh, good. My engineer just brought me a glass of Plantation Red to enjoy with the show. I bottled this last week. What was it, Monday or Tuesday? Monday. Yeah, Monday I bottled the red. And Tuesday I did the spice. And Wednesday, no. I'm off on my... I have done three, but... What, 3 days? I guess it was Friday, I think I did the red. And then, Friday I did the red because we ran out. So Friday I did the red, and then Monday I did the spice, and Tuesday I did the blush. So just got those done. But got some stuff to share with you tonight. As always, we got things that we can talk about and tell you about wine here. Here's something that I found interesting. A new project, and as soon as I can grab it here, I'll read this to you. A new project. This is from Processing Magazine. It's a trade journal. New project investigates reuse of winery waste. Australian researchers are working on ways to turn winery waste products into natural compounds that can be reused in the winemaking process. Little small article here. Researchers from the Department of Chemistry and Biotechnology at Swinburne University in Melbourne are building on a doctorate research project to turn winery waste into something more valuable. Actually, most of your winery waste are fed to hogs and stuff like that now. They said, and this is from a chemist, Dr. Avinash Karp, whose initial doctorate research project investigated turning this waste into biofuels, said, I quote, Australia produces around 1.8 million tons of wine grapes every year. After the grapes are crushed, almost half of that amount, comprising of skins, pulp, stalks, and seeds, is disposed of as solid waste in landfills, polluting the environment. So, in the European Union, the organic waste left over after pressing grapes was classified as industrial waste. And as part of a new project, Swinburne will provide research and development support for wine and beverage company DAL Group in Australia. Refers to DGA, DAL Group in Australia. Earlier this year, DGA acquired Southern Estate Wines, whose Griffith facility in New South Wales is capable of producing 20 million liters of wine a year. Microbiologist Professor Enzo Palumbo, chair of the Swinburne Department of Chemistry and Biotechnology, said, quote, at the time we approached DGA, we were looking for a client for the technology we had developed. It became apparent that the wine industry had other possible applications, so we started the conversation about how we could work with DGA and the wine industry in general to find solutions to their problems and other problems. So, they're looking at doing something. As I find out stuff, I will keep you informed. But it looks like, they're working in Australia to do something with all the waste coming from wineries. Interesting. Good. A British brewer, and this is something I just saw today, Dateline today, a British brewer wins a 2-year battle against the French champagne makers to call his beer Champel. Awful close. I can see why there was a problem, all that, but it's not Champagne. Essex Man from Essex, England. Triumphs as the David over the Goliath. He was battling against lawyers representing Mum, Moet, and Pettinger. So the big ones. He said that a new sparkling beer. Now, here's something else, too. It's a sparkling beer, not just beer. Called Champelle will go on sale tomorrow after two-year battle. Now, this, again, is today's date. So, after two-year battle and legal threats from French champagne producers who said the name was too close to Champagne, the English tipple, which will be sold in sparkling wine-shaped bottles, complete with a traditional wired cork. Wow, he really does. I can see why they were upset about that. This is the first I heard about this. Has been made my vineyard on Marcie Island in Essex, where, according to local legends, the Romans first tended vines 2,000 years ago. But the bottle, or the battle to produce the powerful Champelle, which is actually 10.5% alcohol, was finally won by the owner, Roger Barber, who convinced the trademark authorities that he had no claim on, they had no claim on the word champ, C-H-A-M-P, which, you know, hey, a good approach to that. Champagne growers insisted that champ was the common familiar term for champagne. You know, well, that's good, because I've never heard champagne called champ. I think I'll have a glass of champ tonight. No, we've never said that. But Mr. Barber pointed out that in England, champ was short for champion. Excuse me, not champagne or champagne. The committee, the Committee Intro Professionnel de Vin de Champagne, Promote and Protect the Champagne Label, was sent Mr. Barber a letter stating that you cannot use that. And this committee had the houses of champagne houses of Mum, Moet, Vevey, Cloquet, Tattinger, Paul Roger Bollinger, and Laurent Perrier. Says the French champagne house Tattinger makes sparkling English sparkling wine. So it was a fight. Put the trademark request, but he got the letter from French almost immediately telling them that they could not use that name or there would be serious and costly legal consequences. But Mr. Barber said he wasn't about to give in and argued the case and won. We bottled the first champagne in 2013. Now it now has the right bottle age and is ready to be sold and drunk. It was made with traditional malted barley with the addition of champagne-style yeast that gives it the effervescent bubbles. Mr. Barber says it tastes very smooth and has some fruity notes unlike a Trappist beer, and has been produced on an initial 2,000 bottles for which he sells for £16 each. £16 each. Wow. What size? It didn't say what size bottle, did it? No, it doesn't. It's 10.5% alcohol. He added that he has no immediate plans to ship his wine or his Champelle to anywhere in France. So, there you go. It's if you happen to see Champelle, it's a sparkling beer, and it's legal, and it can be sold, and it's from England. So he won his battle. Good for him. You know, it's always nice to see the underdog win every once in a while. So he's got it there. Okay, now let me, there we go. Got some other information here for you, some little bit of news. My engineer told me that I need to do an early quit tonight on this. She said because we can't run over tonight, so I don't know. You know, you always listen to your engineer regardless of what she says. The Yeah. Yeah. She told me don't look back at her. Yeah. And she heard Mike chuckle too. So that wasn't me. That was Mike.
No, I wasn't chuckling.
I mean, no, he wasn't. yeah. Okay. Okay. What is this? This is different things here. Let's see. Okay, here a few things on this series of articles here. This is, they took it down. I just read this morning and I wanted to share it with you and then read it now and it's not here. Oh well, so much for sharing that with you. It was talking about the new .wine sites and how it's being launched a new mobile wine store using wine.com and .wine and stuff. So, I guess, I'm not going to read that to you. They took it down. Prosecco becoming a victim of its own success. There's just Prosecco is booming out there, and because it's booming, then the regions can't keep up with it. So it's becoming harder to find, which is raising some of the prices, which is turning people off, which is a classic circle there that it's for the Prosecco wine. They're happy, though, because they have it. Well, this is not the articles I was wanting on this. Let me go to see if this is one. yeah, a huge outbreak of Pierce disease in Sonoma. I think I mentioned that. I'm going to do a show on Pierce disease probably in a week or two here. I'm still gathering up information and stuff. And be surprised, number of people. Excuse me, my voice is horrible. Pollen's in the air. Just tearing up my voice. We're getting a lot of oak tree pollens, and it's been horrid on my voice doing tastings at the winery and here and all that. Let's see, what is it? California industries. Is it the storms? The El Nino is helping the California drought, although some areas are causing flooding, but nothing has really affected in very many vineyards. It's been mostly low-lying areas and stuff. So it's a good thing. It's starting to store some waters up in the mountains. And that is what really is the most important thing about these storms is the snows and stuff. And so that's starting to get better up there. I had some of these articles. I don't know why I'm not finding them now. Yes, winemaking champagne taste. Into close compare. Oh, here we go. This is another one too that's along that. If they didn't take this one down. No, they didn't. Okay. Domains. We mentioned to you a couple of weeks ago, or so, a month ago sometime, about the new domain names. According to the press release today, domains.wine has launched a marketplace with over 1,000 premium wine-related domain names. Domains.wine was created by the main professional Brandon Pollock and the wine connoisseur James Bradley Williams to provide the wine industry with a perfect place to find wines. With all the buzz about the new .wine website, they figured it's a need to have a community projects for it, and so they created domains.wine. And it says, while most generic .com domains are no longer available or are for sale at very high prices, .wine and .vin are offering great opportunities, and the .wine and .vin domain extensions express exactly what the business is, so there's been an incredible enthusiasm for and all that. Some examples of domains that have already developed are champagne.wine, port.wine, and sherry.wine. They're also offering a portfolio of nearly 1,000 dot wine and dot vin domains, and some dot coms with the wine names in it. It includes such names as cork.wine and bottles.wine, and also names that are available are maker.wine, distributor.wine, and events.wine. Regional names like Los Olivos.wine, SLO.wine, and Malibu.wine are also available. They have bread and breakfast.wine and bars.wine. And then also they are offering things like best.wine and cult.wine and oldvine.wine. And then cheers.wine and everything.wine are also available out there. It's exploding out there. They're offering over 12,000 .wine and .vin names. There's over 12,000 .wine and .vin names that have been registered since its introduction at the beginning of this year, in January of this year. And they expect it to be over a million before the end of this year. So .vine and .vin are... It's exploding out there, and just like we expect it would when we first talked about it a couple of weeks ago, and things are going to be. But, you know, to switch everything over to you know, if you already have an established website or something, to switch everything over to it, to me, would seem like it would start becoming rather expensive. Grapevine Pinot Gris virus has been found in Napa Valley. This is a... issue, especially since Pinot Gris is such a very popular wine now. It's a leaf virus. Growers have a new worry, which is in danger of reducing their yields in the crops. The Pinot Gris virus, or GPGV, grapevine Pinot Gris virus, GPGV, recently was identified in a number of Napa Valley vineyards. After it's been discovered in Korea and Canada, and also it's widely spread out in the Mediterranean region. Now it's in Napa. The virus was the topic of one of the sessions at the recent pest and disease organized event in Napa by Napa grape growers and others. The seminar was held in Napa, and it was very well-attended session that people were quite concerned about what was going on. It's only been identified recently. The symptoms of the grapevine Pinot Gris virus is molting of the leaves, leaf disformation, and stunting. And they were first noticed in Trentino in the northeastern Italy in 2003. And was identified in 2012 by sequencing numbers of the Montracovirus genus, new disease in Italian vineyards. The new virus is found not only Pinot Gris, called Pinot Grigio in Italy, so all of you say, well, it's going to affect Pinot Gris, not Pinot Grigio. Yeah, it will. But also in Traminer, known in the U.S. as Gewurztraminer, and Pinot Noir, and they expect it to also affect varieties including Chardonnay. Whoa! I mean, this is not good here. If you're a fan of any of those grapes, what it's going to end up doing is going to cost you more money. The GPGV sequence analysis demonstrated that it was closely related to grapevine berry inner necrosis virus, but affected only the leaves, not the berries. It's being spread by the erophyted mite in the Gaeta. The actual name of it, which I'm not going to try to pronounce. GPGV has been reported in symptomatic and asymptomatic vines for wine and table grape varieties in many countries, with symptoms appearing in 16 of 17 vines tested. It was also found in 6 of 23 vines that didn't exhibit symptoms. So, The virus has since been found in Trentino. I'm going on some of these grapes. And in Slovenia, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Greece, France, China, Turkey, Republic of Georgia, South Korea, Canada, and the United States. Boy, this is a new one here that it could be something that is quite serious, or if it's going to start affecting other grapes. Let's see, where am I? Lost my home. The effects of the infection on grapevines are still poorly characterized. The relationship between GPGV infection and disease symptoms appears to be complex and not yet understood. Biological and molecular assays use Pinot Gris and Gewurztraminer grapevines suggest that they may be different symptomatic and asymptomatic GPGV isolates. A survey of cultivars in the Trentino region of Italy showed widespread distribution of about 80% of the vines that were tested. Wow. In most cases reported supporting multiple viral infections. Other viruses were found along with the GPGV. These were included grapevine rupestris, which is stem pitting associated virus, and grapevine rupestris vein featuring a virus. So it is becoming more and more serious, it looks like. Early research showed that GPGV could be eliminated easily by in vitro meristem tip culture and or thermotherapy. Thermotherapy treated vines were maintained for 2 to 4 months at 38 degrees centigrade or for 40 days at 34 degrees centigrade. An obvious question to California growers is whether GPGV is present in the Foundation Plant Services vineyard in Davis and at Russell Ranch, where they get their rootstock. At Russell Ranch, they've tested 234 vines and found none affected. But it has received culture therapy and passed on quarantine tests, and they are still checking continuously. They tested 20 vines recently, and all tested negative, and no indication of active spread of the virus. GPGV also has been detected in a grapevine rootstock breeding selection originally propagated from seedlings. Recently, a private virus testing laboratory reported GPGV from 3 separate vineyards in Napa, including selections of Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and Chardonnay. So, you know, wow. They're working on new testing methods. They're working on ways to control it. They're working on all sorts of stuff. They don't have anything here. They're just, you know, telling that this is out there and this is a problem, and this is something that it will affect us, and the fact that it will affect us in lack of grapes available and lack of juice available. And like I've said over and over again on this program, just about every state in the nation gets juice from California. Because of that, this could cause an effect on everybody. So GPGV, grapevine Pinot Gris virus is what it is. I'll see if I can't find more on that. In fact, let me leave myself a note here to be sure that I look up more on that, because if I don't, I'll misplace it. GPGV and grapevine Pinot Gris virus. Find more. Okay, I'll look that up and see what more I can find out on it and pass it on to you. But, wow, GPGV. We'll keep you informed. This will be your source for GPGV updates as and if I find them. This is from March 10th, so this is the beginning of this month. So, a situation there that we need to be
concerned about. Razor Water Auction. The Napa Valley Venters Auction. Ventures grants nearly $6 million from the Napa Valley Auction proceeds. Helps 17 nonprofit organizations in Napa Valley, earned over $6 million this year. So a good auction again this year, as that is every year. The world's most expensive cities to buy wines. I saw this. If you're out there, you may be interested in this. If you're traveling, this is something else you may want to know about. The world's most expensive cities. The Geneva, Switzerland, 750 bottle of average cost of a 750 bottle is $8.06, down a little bit, but that's the average price. That's down from last year, but $8.06. Paris, $10.71. That's down from last year too, by about $2. Or 12.7%. Copenhagen, 11.57 a bottle on average. That has dropped from last year, but still it's starting to jump up there. This is average cost. London, 12.47 for a bottle, 750 milliliter. This is all this is in American money. I can give you the euro, but probably know it in American money. New York City, $14.03 an average cost of a bottle of wine. Zurich, $14.17 average cost of a bottle of wine. Hong Kong, up to $16.47 for a 750 bottle of wine. Singapore, number three, at $22.39 for a cost of a bottle of wine. And number two, Los Angeles. Wow, that was a surprise there because of, well, it's California. But that's also, you're averaging this out with the U.S. dollar and the weaker euro, so that's going to make it make a difference there. $23.53 is the average cost for a bottle of wine in Los Angeles. That's up over last year by about $1.40, so it's raised up. And number one place that's the most expensive to buy a bottle of 750 wine is Seoul, South Korea. Average cost for a bottle of wine there is $25.43, so it's getting expensive out there in some of those areas, and that is up from last year also. So, if you are traveling or if you're out there, then places to pick up wine before you go, not while you're there. No, that's not it. Ditching beer for wine, do the related falls. There's fine. Nope. Oh, she's making noise in there. Gallo Constellation brand. Those two together, and those are two of the biggie ones out there in the winemaking industry and the winemaking world. Gallo and Constellation brand claim nearly half of the domestic wine's hot brands. Whenever you talk about any of those, that is the big umbrellas. Gallo's Barefoot Cellars is easily the largest player. And we had the guest of Barefoot who founded Barefoot on our radio program. Barefoot Cellars continues to resonate with customers who share belief that wine should be fun, less serious, and always varietal correct, says Stephanie Gallo, who's vice president of marketing. I talked to Stephanie. I called her about the corks situation, and Stephanie, I actually talked to her. Also, Gallo has six domestic wines with Liberty Creek, which you find just about everywhere, and that's a pretty decent, inexpensive wine. Apothic, Dark Horse, Carnivore, and William Hill Estate, all back on a dark horse that's expanded now. It's nationwide as of last spring and is growing bigger than any of the others, jumping from 5,000 cases in 2012 to 875,000 cases last year. Around $10 a bottle for Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, Merlot, and red blends. It is a big, big seller, obviously. And also Carnivore. I'm not familiar with Carnivore. I don't ever remember seeing Carnivore. C-A-R-N-I-V-O-R. Carnivore. I don't remember seeing that. It has a strong appeal among millennials, it says. And then Gallo's William Hill Estate, which is the higher end of the Gallo wines. It's the hot brands. Sells between $17 and $60. Constellation hot brands. And you say, who's Constellation? Well, you've seen Black Box out there. Black Box is the big one for Constellation. It's $24.99 for a 3-liter box. On average, I've seen them less. I've seen them more. It features 9 varietals and a red blend of 400,000 cases last year. And also Black Box has launched a new little 500 milliliter Tetra Pak. You may have seen those. They're in Walmart's, or Walgreens all over the place. I stop by Walgreens and I see these little in racks of the Tetra Pak. So that's jumping up. Constellation purchased a new Cane Wines Region 13, also earned hot brands. Let's see, what is it? From Joe Wagner's Copper Cane Wines and Provisions. Meiomi, I guess it is. Meiomi. M-E-I-O-M-I. I don't remember seeing that. It was launched in 2009 and sold 90,000 cases in 2010, its first year on the market. It sells for around $25, and Pinot Noir is the big one of that. Also, strong Constellation brands is the Dreaming Tree. I've seen that. This debuted in 2011 in collaboration with musician Dave Matthews, and it's set to pass the 500,000 mark this year. Retailing at $15 for $750, it has become eco-conscious consumers are buying it because the bottles are 50% lighter than the average wine bottle and features sustainably grown cork and labels made from 100% recycled paper. All corks are sustainably grown. I wonder if people know that, if they're harvested. But Dave Matthews is behind the Dreaming Tree from Constellation Brands. And that's the big one now, growing up there. So there you go. Gallo and Constellation Brands has some, as always, they're jumping out there with the big sales and the big wines and all that. Let's see. Burns Fountain. South American wines continue to grow in the United States. Very large amount of South American wines being delivered. Texas winemakers delivering extremely good juice. Texas, we know. I mean, I had some people come into the winery this past week, and they were talking about Texas wines, and it was really very exciting to talk to some people that actually have it there in front of them all the time. Too bad that they don't and can't make enough of it to ship around the country, because it would be great to be able to taste some of those Texan wines, or actually any state, not just Texas, but any state. It would be fun to see what's going on with that and all. But I guess we have to travel there. Although Mike did travel there and brought me wine, hasn't gotten it to me yet.
it's in okay. The mail.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the check's in the mail. Yeah, that's okay. I just, it just dawned on me, and I figured I'd get that little reminder in there. Yeah.
I know.
Okay. character, let's see, this is interesting. We've talked about wine labels before and how wine labels are actually a multi-billion dollar business just so you can buy wines and look at getting wines. But this is an interesting little thing here. Character-driven labels are really starting to drive wine sales. These are 19 Crimes is the wine label. And this is labels on 19 Crimes wine bottles show a gritty historical mugshots of criminals banished to Australia, where the wine is coming from. These are 19 criminals. You know, Australia's been a penal colony, and that's how it really got started. And this wine actually pays homage, I guess, to the criminals. The story behind it, the 19 Crimes brand bases its story on the original offenses that back in the 1800s could get you deported from England to the then new penal colony of Australia. Impersonating an Egyptian was one of them. Stealing a shroud from a grave was another. And clandestine marriage could all result in punishment by transportation. The winning touch point number one, the creative team that sold in the idea of placing actual historical mugshots on wine label deserves a round of applause. Photography alone on a wine label is somewhat rare, much less a gritty mugshot. When scanning the store shelves, the stopping power of the 19 Crimes label is undeniable. The faces of the convicts on the labels almost beckon shoppers to release them from the shelf. The 3.5-minute web video, To the Banished, is a short film, a dramatic recreation of banishment of poet John O'Reilly and his fellow prisoners on the convict ship Hougoumont. The camera follows O'Reilly under the deck where he gathers with his fellow prisoners and produces a loaf of bread, some cheese, and finally a bottle of wine, which they all share. And this works because 19 Crime Stories has nothing intricately to do with wine. It is just the origin story of Australia, which happens to be where the wine is made, and it tends to add an air of authenticity to the brand. A passage on the 19 Crimes website reads, and I quote, "The men featured on our wine labels are not those of fiction. They were flesh and blood, criminals, artists, and scholars," end quote. And this is bridges the gap in history to what the reader and drinker have when you like to crack a bottle with your fellow outlaws. You know, so the 19 Crimes it's really starting to pick up and sell on it. I'm going to have to look for that in the store. I don't know if they've shipped that to the United States yet or not, but that sounds like a fun thing. And that's what they want to do, I guess, is get a fun thing there and get people to buy it and look at it. Let's see. This article, and this is something that I know I'm sort of mixed on. Wine additives should be labeled. This little article here says, and this is written by Marissa Bailey from KLEWTV.com. KLEWTV. I don't know where KLEW. Let me click on KLEW and see if it tells me where that is. Well, KLEW is 49 degrees right now. Craigmont Community. I don't know. I don't know where KLEW is. I don't recognize name of counties. I don't recognize. It doesn't give any cities. It doesn't.
Is that a TV station?
Yeah, KLEWTV.com. KLEW.
Yeah, that's Lewiston, Idaho.
Oh,
Channel 3, okay. CBS.
Lewiston, Idaho. Okay, very good. So there you are. This is Lewiston, Idaho. Well, L-E-W, hey, that makes sense. All right. I like that.
I just remembered that from memory. I just pulled that out of memory. So
did you? Did you? Very good. Yeah. And can't remember to give me my wine. And so,
but I know every TV.
Every TV is call letters in the country, but you can't get me wine. Yeah, okay. Thanks.
Put that, on a wiki, put that on a wiki page. I'll remember it.
Oh, okay.
All right.
This Marissa Bailey says about 25% of Americans drink wine on a regular basis, but you may be surprised at what's in some wines. The perception is that you're drinking fermented grape juice. The reality is not exactly true, said Christopher Knoll. Knoll studied the contents of moderately priced wines and found a lot more than just grapes. He says, when you drink a glass of wine, especially a relatively inexpensive glass of wine, you're drinking a huge range of compounds and chemicals that you have no idea that are present in the wine. There can be more than 200 potential additives in wine. Oh, come on, 200, including sulfites for preservation, mega purple for coloring, gelatin for texture, and a chemical called Valcarin, which kills any living organism in the wine. The amount used in a bottle of wine are legal and safe for consumption like all other additives. Industry experts said inconsistent grape harvest forced winemakers to use additives to make sure each bottle of wine tastes the same. Wine expert Clara Orban said wine has additives just like any other processed food item. She says, I don't think additives in wine are something to worry about right now. We have a very good and very strict food regulations in the United States right now. If people don't want anything in their wine and just want pure natural wine, says Binny's director of wine sales, Doug Jeffers, organic producers, those that have sustainable agriculture that are giving back to the land. They're still allowed to use some chemicals, though, so keep that in mind. We've already covered that. Those wines are labeled organic or natural and contain few or no additives. For Noah, it comes down to an issue of disclosure. I want to know what I'm eating, and I want to know what I'm drinking. Labels should be required on wine just the way they are with any food, Noel said. Current regulations don't require that winemakers to disclose if sulfites, a preservative, are present. You know, I mean, yeah, okay, and we've talked about this. You're going to start having to put all the things. A glass of red wine contains over 350 different trace chemicals, and a glass of white wine over 250. You're going to have a little fold-out label that drops down in fine print so you can go back through this thing and look at all the different things. That's ridiculous. Come on, people. But, you know, thank you, Marissa Bailey, for your input on that. And Lewiston, Idaho. Sulfite in wine. Okay, here we go. Friend or foe? This is, we just mentioned sulfites there. Sulfite, it's a friend. It really does. Sulfite in wine actually does help preserve it and clarify it. This is from Decanter Magazine. Decanter Magazine is, I used to subscribe to it, but it was basically it's a across the pond magazine, not United States so much as European Union, British. It says here, many winemakers consider SO2 essential for
Whoops. We seem to have lost Ron. Think I'm on here, so I don't know. Not hearing anything that we are on. The host has been disconnected, and we're getting lightning storms, and we have severe weather. Ron is back.
I'm back. What happened?
I don't know. All of a sudden, you were gone. I don't. Are
all
you
of a sudden, I was gone.
Or what? You're not getting any kind of weather up there?
No. It's actually, we still haven't had any rains here yet.
Wow.
The mow down the back. But it just disconnected. I'm sitting tall. All of a sudden, I started hearing noises and stuff. And I went on to look and clicked around. And then all of a sudden, it said, since you're hooking into a live show, you're being connected. And then they connected me. So.
Yeah,
I don't know. Probably my engineer did something. She wanted me to end it early tonight, so she probably did something.
That was early. Power of an engineer. That's right.
You're there done. You go. There you go. All right.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. Hey, you know, you never can put it past them. Well, this thing on sulfites is rather long, so I'm going to save that for another time. How's that? Because I do want to talk about something else real fast before we get off the show here, and we're getting toward the end. So let me this is something. Now, we've been talking about this off and on the shows for a while here, and I just saw this, and this just came out today. And let me load it here. We have been talking, I don't want to do that. Continue on to the article here. We've been talking about arsenic in wine. That has been coming up over and over again, and we've had all sorts of different things that we've discussed. The lawsuit claiming 83 California wine brands contain dangerous levels of arsenic has been settled in the winery's favors. The California court has dismissed the arsenic lawsuit against wineries. But the plaintiff's lawyers vowed to fight on. Of course they do. For over a year now, some of California's biggest wine producers stood accused of poisoning consumers with excessive levels of arsenic in 83 different wines. Today, and that is Dateline, March 24th, 2016, a judge in California Superior Court in Los Angeles dismissed the case. The hearing was in response to the plaintiff's supplemental filing alleging that the wineries are in violation of California's labeling laws by not disclosing the presence of arsenic per a series of regulations known as Proposition 65. We talked about that in the past, too. You can go back and listen to about that. The wineries argued that their current labels, which warn about the dangers of alcohol, meet the law's requirements since there have been no government ruling that the trace levels of arsenic found in wine pose a health threat. And the wine producers correctly argue that existing Prop 65 warnings comply with the Prop 65 regulatory program, wrote the judge in his decision. The defendant, Treasury Wines Estate, told Wine Spectator, the well-being of our consumers has always been a top priority, so we are delighted that the Los Angeles Superior Court has confirmed that the plaintiff's claims of failure to warn of trace levels of arsenic in wine have no legal merit and was, quite frankly, absurd. The California Wine Institute issued a statement calling the suit, quote, an unfounded claim that trace amounts of arsenic in wine pose a health threat to consumers. They filed the lawsuit back in March 19, 2015 against Treasury Wine Estates, which includes Trinchero, Fetzer Vineyards, and Bronco. They alleged that arsenic was found in 83 brands, including Franzia, Sutter Home, Behringer, Flip Flop, Fetzer, Corbel, Trapache, Cupcake, Smoking Loon, and Charles Shaw. And they were higher levels than what DP allowed. But the judge noted they did not sue for personal injury. She does not claim the arsenic was concentrated enough to have affected health in any way. And she was not harmed by the physical attributes of the arsenic. They amended the complaint in September 2015, and they sought $2,500 per day for every bottle of wine distributed under those labels. Damage could have totaled hundreds of millions of dollars. And on December 15, 2015, the defendants filed a demurrer, a motion to have the case thrown out.
The wine labels, they argued, supplied all the legally required information, and it was well within the law. After hearing an hour of arguments on Wednesday, today, Judge Wiley agreed and upheld the demurrer. The plaintiffs have vowed to fight on. Quote, these defendants never once denied that their wines had extremely high levels of inorganic arsenic, so we plan to continue fighting to protect consumers and ensure that they get accurate information about the wine they're consuming, said the co-lead counsel for the plaintiffs, Michael Berg, in a statement. So, it was dismissed based on Prop 65, but obviously it's not going to go away. So, we will, again, continue to hear. But the lawsuit right now against the wineries for the arsenic in the wine has been dismissed by California courts. So, there you go.
Ongoing or something.
And it probably will still be ongoing. That's not going to end it. So.
All right. We do need to close the show for tonight. And there's no events going on or anything.
Nothing this week. Easter weekend. Enjoy yourselves. Be safe out there if you travel. We will be closed Sunday. That is one of the three holidays that we actually take at the winery. Or four. Let's see. New Year's, Christmas, Thanksgiving, and Easter. Four. One hour four. So will be closed Sunday. But we're open tomorrow and Saturday. So if you're in the area, swing by, visit us. I'll be there. And we'll look forward to seeing all of you next week.
Sounds good. Thank you for tuning in. And y'all have a great holiday, a great Sunday. Well, it's, a lot of people are off, but some people do have to work. Have a good Easter. And enjoy it, and we'll see you next week, which will be sometime in March, the 31st.
The last one of March.
March 31st, last show of March 2016, and have a great week and enjoy the wine, and we'll see you all next time. Thanks a lot.
We'll see you next time.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.